Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Here it is. You ready? Ready, set, bird. It's our birding show today. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are back to answer your questions and share their birding knowledge with you. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a question about the birds. 800-348-2551. You may also email the program, as several people have already done. It's voxpop at wamc.org, voxpop with a V, at wamc.org, or you can call us 800-348-2551. The great Julie Hart, the great Rich Guthrie, you presumably are also great, and we'll find out after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are discussing birds today, and we have our resident avian experts with us, Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's now the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. And Julie Hart is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas, which I think is now in sort of data tabulation mode. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. If you are a citizen, it's your turn to do some science. Call us, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Whatever you want to do, just do it. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, welcome back.
Well, hi, Ray. Good afternoon, and thank you. Hi, Julie.
Thanks for having us.
What's happening, Julie? Anything good?
Oh, you know, it's late summer, so that means that a lot of the young birds are already moving around. So we've got, I'm sure Rich will mention, we've got some rare egrets and ibises and stuff like that showing up.
Neato.
And then we've already got birds starting to migrate, so we're already getting shorebirds from up north.
Uh-huh.
So it's starting to get a little busy again.
Well, we still have hummingbirds. I
yes.
gotta say, I've never had so many hummingbirds around our house as we have this year.
Oh, good.
And I don't know if it's do they stay in pairs?
They stay more or less in pairs. The male stays around, but he's not much use to anybody. But
right.
Yeah. It's the gals that do all the work, and the kids, well, they're out of the nest, and they're showing up like sibling rivalry, showing up at the bird feeders and placing their mark in the territory.
We don't have feeders. We just have beautiful, you know, the bee bomb's sort of done, but we have plenty of
There you go.
That luscious pink flowers.
Works even better.
Yeah. The number here is 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Let's talk about pigeons for a minute. How many kinds of pigeons are there? A lot?
One.
No, well,
one?
Around the world, there's lots and lots
around,
and lots
around,
of different
I don't care about that. Are we around here?
Oh, around here. One.
Okay. Uno. To show you just how unobservant I am, I was up on the roof taking the air here at the station, and there were a couple pigeons flying around, and they dropped in and walked around. These things had green heads. Do they all have green heads?
Some do.
A lot of them do,
but
yeah.
Some don't?
Some don't.
Some don't.
There's a lot of inbreeding and spin-offs from cultured breeding of pigeons. Fancy is through the ages were doing their Mendel things and making pigeon types flourish.
Huh.
And so now we have a whole variety of them out there, and now they're mixing and matching left, right, and all over.
But they're the same species?
Columbia livia.
Okie dokie. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if either of you remember. You must remember. A couple of shows ago, maybe May, or I don't even remember when, Cindy and Vic in West Springfield wrote in, and they included some pictures of this red-bellied woodpecker eating oranges that they had in their backyard in West Springfield. Got this email today from Cindy, who said, "Our red-bellied woodpecker stopped coming to the cut oranges after a few weeks. If you remember my photo I sent to the show, it was early July. I thought it was months ago. Okay. But a juvenile downy woodpecker started making daily trips to the oranges and is also enjoying it. He has also been making many daily trips to the hummingbird feeder. Is this a normal thing for woodpeckers to do?"
Sure. I mean, they are learners by watching. And while the table may have a different setting, they're going to keep an eye on it. And yeah. They're going to give it a try. And rejection is one of the name of the game.
But now, you guys were somewhat surprised when we saw the pictures. And I put them on the page for that show of the red-bellied woodpecker eating the orange. You're not so surprised about the downy?
I was very surprised. I haven't seen these woodpeckers go for fruit before.
Yeah.
I have seen them go for my hummingbird nectar before. But as Rich says, they tend to, these woodpeckers, they learn really quickly. And since they already had a woodpecker going to the fruit in their yard, probably the other woodpeckers are more likely to do the same.
So they learn from others.
They do. Yeah. They watch. And what seems to work, they'll give it a try. Now, I've had oranges out on my yard. I put them out there.
For the robins, right?
Nobody touched
Orioles?
Them.
Orioles?
Nobody. I put them out specifically for the Orioles.
Yeah.
They ignored them. Huh. The red-bellied woodpecker ignored them. The downy woodpeckers ignored them. And every other woodpecker that I had ignored them.
No offense, but maybe you got lousy oranges.
Well, I don't know. I paid a lot of money for them, so I hope they were good. I ate them, and I thought they were good.
Okay, fair enough. The number here is 800-348-2551. And by the way, I did put a picture of the downy woodpecker enjoying a little orange in Cindy and Vic's backyard. So it's on today's show page, WAMC.org. This email from Jill in Mountainville. For several years, a Phoebe has been returning to the same nest site under the eaves of a shed. She's continued to build up the same nest, and this year it's so high, it almost touched the eaves. We never saw her on the nest or the nestlings as we normally would. Should we remove 2/3 of the nest or the whole thing this fall? Would she rebuild the nest in the same spot? And that's from Jill in Mountainville.
I would remove the whole thing.
Yeah, I say yes to all of the above.
Yep.
So
and
why would you do
back.
I mean, and they will build again?
Yeah, they'll come back. Yep.
Yeah, nest building is an important part of their courtship ritual for many bird species. And Phoebes have this, and in fact, it goes all the way back to Audubon, who I believe he was the first in North America to put a tag on a Phoebe, on any bird, but this happened to be a Phoebe in Pennsylvania, just to experiment to see if the same bird came back. And sure enough, this little silver band that he put on a Phoebe's leg came back the next year and subsequent years after.
Amazing. Amazing. This email from Jim in Glenmont. Just had a sip of my Gatorade. Here we go. Good afternoon, says Jim. I sit on my patio and watch the birds all the time in the field and in and around a stormwater drainage basin behind my house. I see birds with worms in their beaks, skimming the water for insects, taking ants off the patio. But there are a lot of wasps and bumblebees and different butterflies, but I never see any birds eating them. Seems like some are big enough for quite a meal and easy pickings to boot, but they seem to be left alone. Why?
Well, it depends on the bird species. If you had kingbirds in that environment, those wasps and dragonflies and bumblebees, they call the kingbird the bee eater, because it's one of their specialties is that they catch large winged insects. And bumblebees, honeybees, yellow jackets, wasps, moths, dragonflies are all fair game.
Won't they get stung?
No, they're fast enough. They can. It's over before the wasp has an idea what's
really?
Going on.
And you'll also, if you keep watching them, when they pick up some sort of insect, they often will smack it against like a branch or something, and they break off the stingers or they break off the wings or they'll stun it to kill it, kind of thing.
You
so they're processing it before they swallow it.
It gets to the level of intelligence and how you would measure that on a human scale. But that seems like a fair amount of intelligence to do that. Rich was talking about other woodpeckers and other birds learning, oh, this is great, this is not so great, and they learn from the others. That has to be a level of intelligence that must be measurable in some way.
Indeed it is. And in fact, many birds learn what not to eat, too. That's how the monarch butterfly manages to survive. A jay will eat a monarch caterpillar, find it not very palatable, and not eat it again. And any future encounters with monarch butterfly larvae, caterpillars, are off the table.
But they don't speak, though. Do they, Do they communicate verbally in a way?
Yes.
But can they transfer information like, oh, don't eat that pupa? They can't.
No.
Verbally.
No, I think it's more just demonstration.
You live and learn.
As I sat in a... I had a terrible reaction to a vaccine over the weekend. Just awful. It was a pneumonia vaccine. And I was in a bit of a state. I was foggy, and it was kind of like dreamlike. And I'm sitting on the back patio listening to the birds.
It was a vaccine, you think?
Oh, no, for sure. For sure. I could tell you more stories, but we're going to leave it alone for now. Anyway, I was counting the number of... So a bird would do something like sit on the wire and do... And it seemed to be a progression of numbers, and it wasn't always exactly the same. But is there intelligence there that other birds can sort of understand the code?
Not really. Not really. I mean, there is an instinctive reaction, recognition and reaction to a song that they are coded to recognize. But beyond that, very little is transmitted in terms of intelligent communication.
How do you know?
Well, you can watch the reactions of them, and you can do playbacks and listen and learn. But if you play the wrong song to a particular bird, it'll ignore it. But if you play the right song, it'll perk up and pay attention. Unless it's an alarm song. An alarm song, they all pay attention. And that I shouldn't say song, call. And then they all
an
pay
alarm at- call. So. Are you all right? You need a water?
No, I'm fine.
A lozenge
or
something?
No, it's maybe a reaction to a vaccine.
I'll tell you,
something.
Well, you know what? Silence. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Julie Hart is the nice one. Rich Guthrie's a little troublesome. 800-348-2551. Your call's coming up. Buddy Rich from the Roar of 74. There's Senator Sam here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Julie Hart is here. Rich Guthrie is also here. It's the Birding Show. By the way, before we get to Rich's list of exciting events and then your calls, just want to let you know they're dragging me out August 26th to the Hart Clewitt Museum. We're doing a WAMC on the road antiques road appraisal thing. You can bring your stuff and... folks from the Stair Galleries will be there to appraise it verbally. Kathy Sheehan, who is the head honcho at the Hart Clewitt, will be there as well. She's also the Troy City historian and the Rensselaer County historian, an amazing individual. And we'll find out a little bit more about the museum and some of the cool stuff they have there. You can find out about this event. It's August 26th. You can get tickets, find out more, just by going to our website, wamc.org. WAMC.org, click on WAMC on the road. And our genius team up there made a poster of me that makes me look like Captain Trips Jerry Garcia circa 1967. I got a big hat on with the stars and stripes, and it's wavy. And, it's the electric Kool-Aid antiques test coming up. Let's go to Ted. Ted, hang in there for a minute because Rich has a short list.
I do, Ray.
Okay.
Here we go. most of the organizations around the area are in sort of like in a summer break, but we have a few. Now's the time, as Julie mentioned earlier, shorebirds are on the move. And I want you to check out the Allen Bird Club over there in Springfield because they're going to be taking a trip to Plum Island in search of shorebirds and the like. Check out their website at allenbirdclub.org and join up with them and go out there to the coast and watch the shorebirds as they're migrating through.
Plum Island's on Long Island, right?
The other one in Massachusetts.
Okay. Wasn't that the place where they...
There's two.
Did all sorts of infectious research.
Yes, right. Yes. That's the quarantine island.
Yes, let's have a nice little field trip out there. Good idea.
It brings home a few souvenirs.
Yeah, exactly.
So then we have the Waterman Bird Club. Tomorrow they're going to be doing a trip out to Norrie Point State Park down in Dutchess County on the Hudson River.
Splendid.
You're going to meet at 7:30 a.m. Again, you got to check their website, the RTWBC, Ralph T. Waterman Bird Club, .org. And then on August 13th, they're going to Tivoli Bay, also on the Hudson River. Again, 7:30 in the morning. August 16th, Saturday, that's going to be Buttercup East, a trip out to there. And then the Sawmill River Audubon Society on August 16th, a Saturday, they're going to Rockefeller State Park for a trip around there for some of the really exciting summer birds that they have along.
Well-heeled birds over there.
Oh, they better be.
Gilded nests and whatnot. Yes. All right.
And that's it. That's summertime.
Well, I don't know if you've met Ted from Ulster, but he's been waiting a long time. Okay, Ted, are you there, buddy?
Yes.
You're on.
Good afternoon. I was wondering, the bee eaters got me thinking about another question, but my main question was, what is this bird? It sounds like, I hear that all the time, pretty often.
Rich, you're the guy who does the sounds.
I'm working on it.
What's the one that goes, caw, caw, caw?
Well, the caw bird is one of our friendly crow fellows.
All right, fine.
What kind of habitat are you in, Ted?
Kind of rural, you know, wooded.
Okay.
In Ulster.
Mm.
But
this is not at night, is it?
It's all the time, just
all the time.
I don't. Often, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of like an earwig. I think we're a team. We're a team. It sounds like
we're a team.
I tell you what,
it's
Ted.
My earwig.
One of my favorite apps on my phone is the Merlin app. I recommend it. It's free. It's produced by Cornell University and those very smart kids out there. Get a hold of that and open it up. And
I stay away from all digital. I'm sorry.
Good for you, Ted. Yes, you're the caller of the day. Yes.
Could I ask about the bee eating? Birds eat the most ticks?
Well, they say the guinea hen as a backyard.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yes.
Guinea fowl, yeah.
And I imagine most of those ground feasting birds will see them. The robins, the grackles, the starlings, the sparrows. They see a tick, they're going to eat it. I mean, they have an incredible eyesight. And no matter how small it is, pretty darn sure they can find it. And if they find it, it's gone.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Possums as well, right?
Possums love them. Yeah. If you see possums in your backyard,
it's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Skunks, too, I guess. But they're,
sure, why not?
I saw one going across the yard the other day, ran in the house. I just don't want to get skunked, you know?
I know, yeah.
Deborah and Adams, you're on.
Yes. Hi. This is Deborah. I had a question about what the Merlin app said was blue heron last night, but there must have been at least three, if not five. And I've just never seen a blue heron other than just one, so I wondered if it was maybe a family with fledglings.
Hmm. Julie, what do you think?
They could be moving around right now. So they're, you know, herons and bitterns and egrets are all post-breeding is what we call it, and they're kind of moving around, and they do sometimes occur in groups. So you could have heard a group, could or may not have been a family, or could have been. I don't know.
Well, I'm wondering how Merlin to me doesn't take count of what's out there. One and done. It may record the same bird several times over, over time. So I'm wondering how it managed to pick up more than one, if that were the case. And herons do actually move around during the night. There's many times they're night feeders, and so they may be relocating. Especially, we have a bright moon out these nights now, so they could be taking advantage of that.
Deborah, what do they sound like?
It was right at dusk. I wish I could play you the sound.
Can you make the sound?
Yeah, you.
They're like, think of a pterodactyl making a sound.
Like at the beginning of Johnny Quest?
It's like this really prehistoric sounding squawk.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the reason I think it was like three to five is because I could hear like one very loudly coming right over me. I was in the trees. But I could hear like out to the, you know, both sides, you could keep hearing a softer, quieter ones, like they're a little bit further away.
They eat fish, right, Rich?
Yeah, they're generally fish eaters, but they do actually have a wide variety of foods. Yeah. And one thing about herons is that they usually don't talk to themselves. So if you hear one, there probably is another one around. Mm-hmm. And so they're reacting to the presence of another and just kind of like announcing either they're here or stay where you are or don't come near me.
There are some big, beautiful birds. Deborah, thanks for the call. Here's a thought. Now, you have birds, Rich, that come and sit on your shoulder and
they love me.
Yeah, they love you. What if you made a hat, an old, like an old straw hat, and you put fish on it? would the blue herons possibly come and swoop in?
I hope not. I hope not for several reasons. Number one, starting with the premise.
Could you try that for the TikTok sake? I mean, it would be gold.
Maybe I'll meet you in Troy with that hat on. You wear your hat.
Oh, no. If you wear that to the Hart Clewitt Museum, you're not invited. You're disinvited.
Okay, then.
Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie join us today. Chris is in Ghent. Hello, Chris.
Oh, this is me?
Yeah, it's, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Just make sure you got the right one. A couple of answers. One was birds that eat ticks, wrens also.
Wrens?
Sure.
Spiders.
Okay.
And
sure.
Spiders. But the question about birds being able to communicate with each other, I had an experience on Long Island many years ago where I rescued a sandpiper or rail or whatever it was that had a clam clamped on its toe, and it was drowning. So I pulled it up out of the water into my boat, and the toe was falling off, so I cut the tendon off. But the bird stayed in my boat and sat on the floor. And when it got comfortable with the surroundings, I had other people in the boats, and we were quiet and gentle. And it cleaned itself, it dried itself off. And when I put my hand down towards it, it touched my fingernail with its beak, and it vibrated. It did this tiny little buzz, and you could hardly perceive it. You couldn't see his head move or anything. And I'm sure the bird was communicating through that vibration.
Huh.
I believe you.
Some of the shorebirds.
You know, there are seagull species that have like a red dot on their beak when they feed their young. The young tap on their beak and get them to drop some food. So I'm pretty sure that's pretty way birds can communicate, by just touching beaks.
You're absolutely right. They do that in many aspects. And my question is, did you keep the clam?
Did you keep the clam?
Oh, it was a big chowder clam.
Oh, chowder clam.
Before we let you go, Chris, Julie.
I just wanted to add that there are some shorebirds that they feed by probing the sand with their bill, and they can sense vibrations in the sand through their bill. So they are using, like, vibrations.
So, Chris, you're lucky the bird didn't eat your hand.
That's
interesting.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's birds today. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. And let's go to Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I have a couple questions.
Great.
Do eagles and pelicans fly up north, and do seagulls fly up into the northeast too?
Oh.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this post-breeding dispersal among birds is kind of widespread. And this is why at this time of year it's kind of fun to look and see who's new and different in the backyard.
So,
seagulls are kind of rare up in the Northeast.
Not anymore, they're not.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no, not anymore.
Write those answers down for next time, Chris. What do you think, buddy?
Okay.
All right, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number. It's birds today. And let's go to Niskayuna. Dennis, you're on.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm hoping that you can give me some solutions. I have a couple of bird feeders, and the squirrels have the best time with my feeders. I end up needing to refill them quite often. So any suggestions that you can offer would be greatly appreciated.
Oh, that's an age-old thing, man. We were talking about that the other day. Julie, what do you do?
I have all of my feeders on a shepherd's hook that has like four different hooks on it. And then underneath the feeders, there is a large baffle that the squirrels cannot get around. And then on top of that, the hooks, the feeders are all placed at least like 8 feet from any other object. So because squirrels can jump quite well.
They sure can.
They can kind of jump off of tree branches. They can jump off of fences, off your porch. So you need to make sure that it's like in the open.
Hmm.
And that will help keep them away from
Okay.
Your food, yeah.
Agree, Rich?
Yeah, that works very when you can. If you don't have this space, there are bird feeders that have sort of like a trap door to them, and they open. They actually close the feeder. If anything heavier than a, let's say, a blue jay or a robin lands on it, the door closes and there's no food. So the squirrels quickly learn that it's no use to be trying out at the feeder. So those are available out there. They're kind of like a trap door feeder.
Aha. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it. The number here is 800-348-2551. So we had that caller who talked about the sound that, remember, it was like,
yes.
You thought, oh, you asked that question, was it at night?
Exactly.
And I think I know where you were going. And Glenn in Great Barrington says, call sounded earlier like a whippoorwill. Mentioned an unknown bird, sounded to me like a whippoorwill. They're common down south, never heard one in western Massachusetts.
And that's what I was thinking, exactly.
Yeah.
But they are not common around here. They're very, and at some places they are fairly common, like up in the, towards the foothills of the Adirondacks and the sheltered valleys in the Berkshires. Down in the Hudson Valley, very, very rare, only a few places where they are.
Are they, they're night birds?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Although I've heard them in the daytime.
Okay, now, what other night birds are in our neighborhood, Julie?
Oh, gosh, there's quite a few. So we have a lot of owls. We also have other nightjars. That's the group that whippoorwills belong to.
They sound similar?
We have night hawks. No, night hawks sound, they just go peep.
Huh.
This, like,
not
this
so nicely.
Funny. Yeah. Yeah. What else? I mean, there's a lot of other birds that will, like, so the marsh birds, like birds that are breeding in wetlands, tend to be more active and singing at night. And then we also have some other birds that will do, like, their courtship displays at night.
Oh, yeah.
Like oven birds, which is a warbler. Cuckoos.
Interesting.
Tend to sing at night. So we have quite a few.
One night this spring, I was awakened. I don't know. It was early in the spring. It was probably warmish, but it was one of those birds, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning or something, and I just lay there saying, wow, I've not heard this before in my neighborhood. So
I'm going to guess it was a mockingbird. They have a reputation, especially on a spring full moon night. They'll sing loudly through the night.
Jim says, to me, it sounded like a titmouse. Could that
That's
be possible?
That's what I was thinking.
You think so?
Sounded like a titmouse to me, too. But
I agree. That sounds right.
All right. And Jim also says, yeah, guinea hens are, they love ticks. They're tick vacuums. Unfortunately, foxes love guinea hens. So there's the thing. All right. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's grab one more call, and then we'll take a break. It's, oh, boy, it's Merle in Argyle. Hello, Merle. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay.
How are you guys doing?
You know, pretty good.
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah.
I can't hear you too good.
Doing pretty good.
All right. The question is, have either one of you seen ever a baby vulture?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
What was the answer?
Yes. They both said yes.
Ugly things.
Yes.
Are they all white?
No.
No. They're not all white.
Okay.
What? All why? Right. What would you see,
well,
man?
Maybe it was a chicken I stirred up. I thought it was a vulture.
Really? Where was this?
In a barn. I was moving stuff in a barn. I moved a big mattress, and this white thing came out with a red head. I only saw it for...
Wait a minute. Now we're getting some looks here, Merle. Hang on. The red head might be a clue.
That's why I thought it was a vulture baby. And I know vultures were nesting in the barn.
Ah.
Okay.
Maybe it was an albino vulture.
When they're really young, they do have white down feathers.
I can't hear.
When they're really young, they do have white on their feathers.
This was almost, I thought it was a chicken at first, but it was too big.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
much bigger than a chicken.
Since you were in a barn, I'm not sure about the red on the head, but the remote possibility might have been a barn owl, which are ghostly white And if you're moving a mattress around, they may not have been too happy with you doing that.
They weren't happy.
No. So it could have been an owl.
Yeah. And if it were an owl, Merle, we want to hear more about it, because barn owls are very hard to observe, and they go mainly unnoticed anywhere in our region. And if it were one, it would be a notable data point for us to recognize.
Oh, we'll have to put you in touch with Merle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'll go look for him again.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, if it was a young bird, then it could have been a young turkey vulture.
Okay.
But if it was really big, they should already have some of the darker adult feathers on them.
Did you get that, Merle?
No.
Okay.
I can hear you, Reg.
Okay.
Good. I can't hear Julie.
All right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It seems loud to me, Julie, but crank it up, Zach. Let's see if we can get Merle to hear this. Go ahead.
So the young...
Now I'm hearing you.
Splendid. Okay, good. Young turkey vultures, when they still have their downy feathers, are white, but they have black heads. When they get larger, like what it sounds like you saw was a larger bird, then they should already have some of their black feathers.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay.
So if it was still all white with a red head, that's not quite fitting for me.
All right. Well, Merle, we're going to have to leave
okay,
it there.
This was 10 days ago.
10 days
ago. Oh, wow. Okay. They should be already full grown by now.
So this is maybe an owl then. Maybe that's where we're
maybe.
Going.
Yeah.
They are out there. The question is we don't know where they are.
Merle, this was fun, but we have to take a break. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, and we'll be back. Silver there, the Jody Grind on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Let's dispatch a few emails, and then we'll get back to the phones. This is from Sad Joanne in Boston Spa. I watched for a week baby cardinals and their doting mom from my bedroom window. Finally, yesterday, two out of the three flew the coop, landed on the ground, chirping till dark. Mother bird nowhere to be found. They were really small and couldn't fly very well. I'm so afraid something bad happened to them. Is that a possibility? As much as I enjoy bird watching, I'm so sorry I saw this. And that's from Sad Joanne in Boston Spa.
Oh, that does happen. That is a normal stage. When they fledge the nest, they really can't fly. And usually the parents will come and they'll still be feeding them in the bushes or wherever they happen to be. But it is also a very dangerous time. So if there are foxes or domestic cats around or something like that, yes, they could be killed that way too. So, yeah, it's possible. It's hard to know without actually like observing and watching them for a while.
A very good reason to keep the cats indoors.
Well, we don't even know if the cat did anything.
No,
or
we
if
don't,
anything happened to the birds.
This is what happens.
Yep. It does happen.
All right, fair enough. This is from Fred. Fred writes, when birders... Okay, and Fred, I've asked this question myself, and I've yet to find an answer from these two that I'm fully satisfied with.
Oh.
When birders are involved in a bird count, such as the Christmas bird count, how can they tell how many birds of the same species they encounter? For example, if I'm at my feeder, how can I tell if I see one bird going back and forth to a feeder at nearby bushes or a group of birds going in succession? Likewise, when I walk around my neighborhood and identify birds by birdsong, how can I be sure how many individual birds I hear? I've also gone hiking and have seen a field jam-packed with red-winged blackbirds. Were there hundreds, thousands? And that's from Fred, who's, you know, I've asked this about the bird counts. How can you get an accurate number?
Well, you don't. And the chances are you're going to undercount.
Mm-hmm.
But statistically, what matters is if you are consistent in your estimations and bad guesses. And so And Cornell University, with their Project Feeder Watch, recommends that you count only the maximum number at any one time and use that as your number. And when it comes to birds in the field, like the hundreds of red-winged blackbirds, take a good guess. And just try to be in the ballpark. It's all about orders of magnitude rather than exact numbers. And that's where eBird protocol comes in.
But go ahead, Julie.
Well, I'll just add, if they're large groups, it's helpful to, depending on how large the group is, to count by tens or 20s or 50s or hundreds, depending on, so that you can get a little bit more accurate group size.
Now, these numbers are used presumably in tracking birds and sort of the populations. What if you have a year or two where you have some really terrible counters? Just awful. Mm-hmm. I mean, that can skew important numbers, right?
It does. But that's where more observations, more input becomes part of the formula. And, it's a good relative measure.
Okay.
A few, a lot, a many, or none.
Yeah. All right.
And each observer is known to be different, so that is taken account of in the models.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yes, it is.
So each observer, what, do you have a rating, secret rating system for each observer?
Yes.
Oh, this guy's a dope. Don't listen to what he says.
Yes, essentially, yes.
Yeah. All the inside story.
We use other words than that.
Really?
Yes, we do, yes.
Fran, really? All right, we'll leave that for another show. Fran and Gallatin, one afternoon I was standing on my west-facing porch when a blackbird with some white in its tail started flying in front of me, making a repeated figure eight. It definitely wanted me to leave. It finally fled off to a wire. Previously, I saw a blackbird, I think the same one, swoop into the barn. When I went out to the barn, there were little broken eggs on the ground, and a nest higher up in the barn was torn apart. Who would that bad bird be?
Well, I'm not sure it's the same culprit, both bad acts.
Yeah.
The blackbird with the white in the tail, who happens to be pretty aggressive, is a tyrant kingbird, perhaps, and that would be the eastern kingbird. They get their name tyrant flycatcher because that's what they are. They are very territorial and aggressive and assertive when it comes to protecting their babies. That might be the blackbird with the white in the tail. It's white underneath, but if he's facing away, you won't see that.
All right, one more email, and then we're going to go back to the phones. This is from Barbara in Ulster County. I'm a part-time Southeast Florida resident. I take WAMC with me via the app. Hey, thank you very much, Barbara. Barbara says, I believe Rich has occasionally spent time in Florida, so I wonder if he can answer this. I'm in a small community with lakes and canals, some oaks, palms, banyans, decorative shrubs. Oh, it sounds lovely. I'm very puzzled that we almost never see any songbirds except mockingbirds. In my years here, I've seen a cardinal twice, and this past winter, a small wren who hopped around the plants. Plenty of water and shorebirds, egrets, herons, the occasional owl, ducks galore, but almost zero songbirds. Any clue, Rich?
Yeah, I do. Unfortunately, a lot of those communities down there with the habitat that you describe are actually very poor on bird-friendly backyards. And one of the things is that it's usually a monoculture that doesn't have the variety that would incorporate the food that birds would look for. And so many of them are using hardcore landscape maintenance protocols, which involves pesticides and close trim maintenance and the like. So I tell you what, find my email. We'll check things out when I were down there sometime.
Why don't you give me an email right now?
It is. My name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, at gmail.com.
Is that your middle name, Peter?
No. But phonetically, it sounds a lot easier to say.
Julie, what do you think his middle name is? Preposterous?
No. Paul? I don't know. P names.
Well, we'll just have
Peter
to
Peter is a
that.
Good one.
Plesiosaur? Let's see. Why don't we go back to the phones? Jim is in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray.
Hello, welcome.
Yes, I don't know if you deserved the yay this time. You kind of deserted us for a while there.
Hey, I went on vacation, man. Had some fun.
Yeah, well, we were poorer for it.
Well, cut it out. We have great colleagues. But thank you. I'm happy to be back. So what's up, buddy?
All right. Okay, well, I was thinking, we've been seeing less and less and fewer of pollinators and all kinds of insects. Years ago when you drove a car in the summertime, it got plastered, the bumper, the grill, the windshield, with all kinds of insects. There's nothing out there. There's too many poisons being thrown around, and I'm wondering how much that is affecting the birds as directly a result of eating some of those insects that got into poison, or the poisons themselves being on the environment and the foods that the birds might eat besides, you know, like plant life.
I think about that myself, Jim. Julie first, then Rich. I think they both have quite a bit to say on the subject.
Yeah, both of those factors come into play for birds. So birds are declining because there's less food. The food that they have is, as you said, contaminated. And yeah, it's not a good situation. And the birds are definitely suffering because of it.
Rich.
I can relate to that. You know, used to be not long ago either that you just drive down a country road this time of year, and you'd be seeing swirls of swallows flying off the wires overhead, hundreds of them going by an open field. Now you're lucky to see a dozen. I mean, that's how drastically these declines have been. And I'm sorry to see, you know, sometimes you run into situations where people are destroying the swallow nests that they have, the few that there are. We got to hang on to the numbers that we got, because sooner or later we're going to have to come to grips with the pesticides that are out there. And then if you have the swallows to regenerate the population, they'll be there. But we don't want to eliminate them in multiple ways.
All right, let's go. Speaking of swallows, let's go to Mystic, Connecticut. Susan, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I do love the swallows. I lived in Vermont for 30 years and just moved to Mystic a couple of years ago. And I love them in my barn. I had no problem. But now that I live in an apartment, I have eaves, and they're nesting up there, and they're pooping all over my deck. I'm trying to get rid of them while they're, you know, nesting, because they're protected. But is there anything I can do to deter them?
Move them onto the neighbor's house. How do you do it?
Well, I've seen people put up actual
I mean, believe me, the apartments, people have been trying to move them.
Okay.
Yeah, that ain't right.
But I think some people have actually destroyed them, though.
That's bad.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, you really, number one, you shouldn't interfere with their nesting behavior. And these are probably cliff swallows, which are one of the few that we have around. Now, I've seen where people will help put up some sort of an umbrella or a canopy to act as a shield against these things. But aside from that, a garden hose to wash things down, I recommend, rather than to wash the nest down.
Okay.
It's kind of like a hard decision to make.
Go ahead,
Susan. The idea that I am getting rid of them is that they came back. It's the same nesting pair. They came back to the exact same spot.
They do that.
And so they like it.
Yes.
Yeah. But I just would like to have them go to another spot.
Yeah, I got you. Julie.
But we're having, again, a lot of problems with that. And, I mean, they're so much fun to watch after they hatch.
Yeah.
And they're zooming all around our, over our pool and everything. It's just so much fun to see them.
And they're also eating a lot of mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Julie.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, a lot of these swallows and like phoebes and robins and things that people have problems with nesting near on their houses, it's partly the structure itself and whether or not there's a place that's suitable for them to nest. Depending on if it was a barn or a cliff swallow, as Rich mentioned, you would do different things, I think, to make it so that there's no ledge, or to make it so that the surface isn't sticky. But the best thing to do would be to, as they're starting to build their nest, before they've laid any eggs, that's when you need to be deterring them.
Susan, thanks a lot. We'll go to, let's just try to get a couple of more calls in here before we wrap it. Ann in Albany. Ann, you're on.
Hello. Thank you. I'm calling about mockingbirds.
I heard Rich say a minute ago, you know, about them singing long and loud at night. And I have heard there was just one the other night. And it had been several years, maybe as much as 15, since I'd heard one at night like that. But the other thing that I saw maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little more, were a lot of mockingbirds sitting during the day on the peaks of people's roofs. And when I was hiking in the fields down by the Normanskill, I would see quite a few of them flying around a tree. Well, then I didn't see any for a number of years. And the one that I heard the other night was the first one I heard at night in a long time. So I didn't know if they cycled through because of a food source or what.
Okay.
And I was hoping that maybe Rich and Julie could tell me something about that.
All right. I think we get the picture. And thank you. And Rich, go ahead, and then Julie, and then we'll go on to the next one.
It's all about the food. You're right about that. And when you see multiple mockingbirds, it's probably about an extended family group. Mom and Pop and the three kids all out there learning the ways that they're going about.
Julie.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree. They need shrubs. They need berries, things like that to eat. So depending on if that food is available, then you'll find them.
And thanks a lot for the call. Quickly to Laurel in the Catskills. Laurel, you're on. You have about 30 seconds.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to make a comment. I was standing in my living room looking out the glass slide door, and there were all these different birds of species flying by, cardinals, robins, you name it. They were all going and flying down in the front of my yard and landing. So I went out the front door to see what was going on, and there was a male and female robin standing on a side on a rock, squawking and making all kinds of sounds. And these other birds, all these other birds that flew in, were dive bombing something in the grass. So my husband and I went over to see what it was, and it was a snake with a baby robin in its mouth.
Oh.
Yeah, not surprising. Yeah. That's what I was actually envisioning that as you were speaking.
Mm-hmm.
They were, really. And it was like they were just all communicating with each other somehow. And then the birds, after we picked the baby, the snake up, my husband picked the snake up and got the bird out. As soon as he did that, all the other birds that were there, the other species ones were all flew away.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it was amazing. I've never seen anything like that.
Well, it was a response to an alarm call that they were reacting to.
Wow, that's incredible. Laurel, thanks a lot for the call. Do you think, you two, that birds can communicate psychically with humans?
Negative.
Are you sure?
I'll stick to that.
I gotta tell you, man, those catbirds are sending me message.
Well, okay. What was that vaccine?
Am I going insane? Is it good that? All right, Rich Guthrie, how do people find you and contact you and whatever?
My email, Richard P. as in Peter, Guthrie, at gmail.com.
Pterodactyl. Close with a silent P. Julie Hart, how do people get a hold of you?
Julie.Hart@dec.ny.gov.
You two are the best. We'll see you next month. Support comes from Capital Region Classical at Union College, presenting concerts from October through April, featuring pianists Emmanuel Axe, Jonathan Biss, Paul Lewis, and others. CapitalRegionClassical.org. The Hyde Collection Museum in Glens Falls, offering creative summer workshops for kids, including sculpture, painting, graphic novels, and more. HydeCollection.org for registration. And Curtis Lumber, providing materials from start to finish for any size building or home improvement project. Daily service. No. Oh, boy, I'm not good at this. Daily delivery service available at CurtisLumber.com. Someday when I learn to read, I am going to be a real radio pro. Hey, tomorrow should be fun. First of all, thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, who is a radio pro. Barb King, a living saint. Thanks for screening the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we check in with Professor Kevin Knuth for another one of our semi-regular talks about UFOs. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.